Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You're listening to Farming News with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello, folks, and you're very welcome back to another episode of the Irish Farmers Journal Farming News podcast brought to you by Univet. I'm news correspondent Noel Barden, and I'll be your host for this week. When joining me, we'll have news correspondents Anne O'Donoghue and Declan O'Brien. Coming up this week, we'll talk about an EPA survey on culling the national herd. We'll talk about the Nature Restoration Law. We'll talk about 2023's grass growth and utilization figures and what they cost farmers, as well as Rabobank's dairy price outlook for the coming year. So I suppose first off on the front page, we had that 23,700 farmers were issued payments this week, totaling 113.6 million. So that's roughly one in every six farmers in the country. The vast majority of them receiving payments will be in the West. Now, these payments will take some time, the department has said, just to land in farmers' accounts to go through the bank verification and everything else. But essentially what these payments represent is an interim payment for the acre scheme. So last December is when advance payments worth 85% of a farmer's total 2023 acres payment started issuing, but there's been complete logjam in the department since. So less than half the farmers participating in the scheme have got that payment, and the delays have been dragging on months. So the payments, essentially they're bypassing the acre system and just making flat rate payments to farmers rather than 85% of their total payments. And to a farmer that went into acres the general route, this payment will be worth €4,000 to them. To farmers in the cooperative route, it'll be worth €5,000. And the minister has committed to making all acres payments, so whatever balance is due by June of this year. So that'll be definitely one that we'll be looking out for. There's been quite a lot of controversy there in those payment delays. They came after other payments were pushed back by a couple of weeks at the back end of last year, and the department has missed a lot of the deadlines it has set, particularly around the acre scheme. And Anne, moving on to you, you were tuned in last week to the Joint Oireachtas Committee on Agriculture. Antashka had a bit to say on nitrates and how it thought that the nitrates issue could be solved and how water quality could be improved. What did Antashka's representative say?
Yeah, no, so as you said, this was the Oireachtas Committee on Agriculture last week, so this would have been last Wednesday, and there's a couple of different groups there, Antashka, Birdwatch Ireland, and a few more. They were giving their views, I suppose, on nitrates, and Antashka was represented by their head of advocacy, Dr. Ray McGough, and she basically said that in terms of, I suppose, nitrates, she referenced a Water for Life project, and that basically said that the only highly ranked measure for nitrate mitigation is reducing nitrate load. And she said, for example, that would be through livestock reduction units per hectare. Elaine then went on to say that the other mitigation measures that are used on farms, such as less protected urea, extended buffer zones, that they're ineffective when it comes to nitrate leaching. If I'm quoting her correctly, that she said that they're effective when it comes to phosphorus, but not when it comes to nitrate. So I suppose there was a bit of reaction to this throughout the week. The story rolled on. The ICMSA president, Dennis Drennan, came out and said that basically he thought these comments were too simplistic and, you know, that didn't look at the whole picture, and also that they were anti-dairying. You know, he said that this is solely focusing on farms, that, you know, when we're looking at improving water quality with regard to nitrate, we need to look at the whole picture and all the different areas. He also said that, you know, the mitigation measures that she referenced in terms, as I said, less protected urea, buffer zones, that they take time to work through the system and the farmers need to be given a bit of time to improve that. And then he also made a comment then that, look, slurry storage, the farmers, you know, they need to be supported, better support in increasing their slurry storage capacity. He was referencing, you know, TAMS approvals are taking too long, planning approvals taking too long. And he said, look, there needs to be a fast track avenue for those to help farmers. So that's the two different sides of it there, Noel, on that one. But there's quite a lot of interest in that story throughout the week.
And sticking on the cow numbers side and the environmental side of things, you've coverage as well in this week's paper of an EPA survey where the EPA went out and surveyed the public on, I suppose, their views and different environmental measures and whether or not they support them or not. They had a couple of findings that were to do with agriculture, I suppose. So what did this EPA survey find is the public's, I suppose, the public's view on agriculture taking action for the climate?
Yeah, no, so there's a couple of specific questions in this survey about agriculture, which I think our listeners will find really interesting. Just, I suppose, maybe to start to give a little bit of an overview on the survey. This is the Climate Change in the Irish Mind survey, and it's the second wave of it. So in 2021 and 2022, there were similar surveys done to this. So this is kind of a follow on to this. Similar questions, I suppose, but just see how have people's attitudes towards climate change changed, for want of a better word. And there was over 1,300 people surveyed as part of this. And interestingly, I suppose the headline figures people want to know, almost 60% of people, that was 59% of people, said that they would support to some degree culling the national cattle herd. And that would be, and that question was framed as culling the national cattle herd to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So you were able to respond to say whether you strongly supported, somewhat supported, strongly opposed, or somewhat opposed. It's also important, I suppose, to note there that 22% of respondents said they would strongly oppose culling the national suckler herd. So overall, to some degree, 41% of people said they would oppose culling the national suckler herd. It was also a specific question in relation to forestry and agriculture. And 91% of people said they would support increasing the area of forestry in their locality to offset greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture. So quite a lot of support there. Survey respondents were asked which sector in Ireland was the largest source of pollution that caused climate change. And then they were given a list of industries and they picked from one. So 3 in 10, 30% of respondents said it was agriculture, and that was followed by one quarter, 25% answered transport, and 28% answered energy industries. So they're kind of the main findings really with regard to agriculture. There's a couple, like just a couple of the other figures people might be interested in. The large majority of respondents, 82%, said that they supported new infrastructure in terms of pylons, substations, when it comes to renewables. I think it was 75% of people, excuse me, 95% of people said that, you know, they agree that climate change is happening and that it is a real phenomenon. So I suppose those figures quite high. They show a lot of awareness with climate change, that it's important to people. As I said, this is the second wave of this service. These questions have been asked previously. So, you know, these kind of results have been out there before in the media. It was asked at the media briefing. It said that on the last survey, there's a lot of feedback, especially on the radio and things, that does this tally with people's real life experience? Is it possible that, you know, when people are being asked these questions, they're putting their best foot forward and, I suppose, answering the answer they may want to hear? The survey authors did say that, sorry, excuse me, the report authors did say that, you know, this survey randomly went out and found people. It wasn't, people weren't asked to opt into it, and that would negate some of the bias there. So they said they felt like that it was fairly down the line, but I suppose that's kind of the headline figures there, Noel.
Definitely a couple of interesting nuggets of information for farmers in there. Just seeing, I suppose, how the public sees that their sector should act on emissions and the whole emission reduction targets. I suppose, and for the past couple of weeks, we've had updates on EU farmer protests. I think you have another bit of news on what the latest is. It looks like there was another tractor protest in Brussels during the week. I suppose very briefly, what's the story there?
Yes, Noel, normally I have our news correspondent Rachel here with me for our protest corner, so I'll have to go solo this week. We were discussing both the protests last week at home and abroad. So in across kind of Europe this week, Brussels saw an escalation or intensification of farmer protests. The EU Council of Agricultural Ministers met on Monday in Brussels, and on the back of that, or ahead of that, we saw tractor protests, we saw slurries dumped, tyres on fire, people crashing through police barricades. So quite dramatic scenes, and protesting again for a lot of the same reasons that we've been highlighting over the last number of weeks: overregulation, bureaucracy, cheap imports from outside the EU, etc. And of course, IFA protests are continuing around the country as well. So that was outside the EU Council of Agricultural Ministers. Listeners may have heard or been aware that, you know, there was a lot of proposals discussed there that how the burden could be eased on agriculture. There's a potential tabling of a reduction in inspection, among other measures. So yeah, that's, I suppose, where the protests are at the minute. It'll be interesting to see after this, do they wane? Do they still intensify? So another one, I suppose, that we'll be touching on briefly in the next couple of weeks. But I think, Noel, on the EU front as well, you had news on the nature restoration law during the week that a lot of listeners might have heard about.
Yeah, so big news on the nature restoration law front. I suppose the European Parliament voted last week, just a week gone by, to finally ratify the law. So instead of talking about proposals when we're talking about this nature restoration law, we are talking about an actual law or regulation that will be in force. I suppose all that's left just is one final rubber stamp of approval from EU member states, but they've already backed the agreement that passed in the Parliament. So this is very much just a formality, in the whole deliberation. So what the reality means is that Ireland will now have 2 years to draw up a nature restoration plan that's going to outline how it's going to meet all of these nature restoration targets. And these targets cover everything from forestry to grasslands to farmland ecosystems, right up to rivers and everything in between. And the overarching, I suppose, objective of the law is to restore 90% of these habitats that are currently degraded into a good condition by 2050. And there's interim targets there, so 30% of them will have to be restored by 2030. I suppose the nature restoration law, when we were covering it off back in 2022, when it was originally put forward by the Commission, some of the targets would have been stronger, particularly on the rewetting side of things. So only 50% of a member state's peatlands will need to be rewet now, whereas it was 70% that was originally proposed by Brussels. And as well as this, there is a number of clauses, a number of kind of handbrakes, and a number of opportunities that will be there for member states to look to defer targets, and to look for slightly lower targets if they are particularly impacted by one or another. So in Ireland's case, it could be the rewetting ones there, but also the farmland ecosystems. So I suppose now we know what the law looks like finally in black and white, but we still need to see what it'll look like on the ground, what implementation will look like. And something that the farming organisations have been critical of, I suppose, all of last year and even right up to just after the vote, is that we don't really know what the impact will be on farmers. We won't know what it'll be until it's rolled out, and there is no funding source, no new funding allocated to it. So I suppose we're going to see a bit of a scramble over the next 2 years between farming organisations, environmentalists, and then the government there in the centre to draw up this plan and to lay out right up until 2050, so over the next 25 years, what its plan is for nature and for conservation. So there'll be a lot of eyes on that. So there's plenty more reading then on the nature restoration law, just what the vote means and the reaction that's came to it and some of the questions that still need to be answered on it in this week's paper. But if we want to move it on now, and I suppose, Declan, we might take you in for this. Teagasc has had a look at grass growth and utilization last year. What I suppose the overall figures mean for farmers and what it might mean for the average farmer's pocket. It was a very difficult year for weather. I don't think any of our listeners need to hear that. But I suppose what kind of figures do you have there, Dec, in what you've covered off this week on grass last year?
Well, Joe Patton, he's the head of Dairy Knowledge Transfer with Teagasc. He was saying that grass growth there last year dropped from 13 tonnes per hectare down to an average of 12 tonnes. Now, he was saying that this was primarily on profit monitor farms. Now, he said at that rate, the amount of grass utilised also dropped by about 3/4 of a ton. So he said if you take a 60 hectare dairy farm, you say 0.75 tons to the hectare less was being utilized by farmers, that meant, he said, that they required 45 tons of dry matter to be bought onto the farm. He said that was either through concentrates or through the fodder. He said at an average of €280 a ton, that brought a cost to €12,000. And he said that went straight off the bottom line for farmers. So what they were saying is, on the back of this is, this year, they're saying they're urging farmers to get back at maximising the amount of grass and to clearly have a focus on a cost. Now, we know last year there was a massive reduction in dairy incomes. You know, it was a collapse from a very high level of 130,000, you know, down to about 60,000. So it was a huge, huge collapse. Their ballpark figures, but he's saying that if they want to tackle that collapse in incomes, they're going to have to get back at growing grass. And he says one of the things that stood out in their talking to discussion groups and talking to monitor farmers, profit monitor farmers, was that there seemed to be a kind of an acceptance that, okay, we can buy in feed to cover these reductions. And he said they're buying it in at a cost and they've got to realise that and that is hitting their cost base. So, but I think there's also, and there's definitely a feeling within Teagasc that the restrictions on fertiliser spreading are going to hit the amount of grass that farmers can grow. And as one man said to me, he said, nitrogen is the petrol that drives the dairy engine. So will they be able to get back up to these high levels at the or because of the restrictions on fertilizer utilization? That's the big quandary out there. And that's the big question mark. And if they can't get there, does that change the whole cost base of Irish dairy? And that has implications down the line.
Yeah, there's some very interesting points there. I suppose poor weather over 1 or 2 years can mask a wider trend, kind of, as you say, with the lower nitrogen use. It can be easy to forget when it's nearly decked by a thousand cuts with a 5% cut to maximum chemical fertilizer use here and another 10% there. The overall figures, if you're to look over 5 years or so, are quite significant, as you said. And sticking with the dairy side of things, do you have any good news now from Rabobank and your reporting on their dairy price outlook for 2024? So, what do farmers need to know from this, or what way are things looking?
Well, Richard Schaefer, he's the main analyst on the dairy side. He's a global analyst for Rabobank. Now, he's painting not a very rosy picture, but definitely a more positive picture for dairy. He said that really what he sees higher prices this coming year, he sees dairy incomes rebounding. He said, look, we're not going to get back up to 2022 levels, but he said we're definitely going to have a better year than the back end of 23. He said, look, this is, he said, there was three factors are playing into this. That's tighter milk supplies, improved demand, and better export demand. Just ironically, what the Houthis are at in the Red Sea is actually helping European dairy farmers, because he said it is stopping product coming in from Oceania into from New Zealand and Australia, coming into the Middle East, and therefore it's opening up the whole North African market for European dairy suppliers. And as we know, like there are massive populations right across the Maghreb or North Africa, you know, from you take Egypt over to Morocco, huge populations on Europe's doorstep. It's a really important market. And he said the impact of these changes has been seen in spot markets, where butter prices on the Dutch market have risen to over 6,000 euros a ton. Now, he said there was very little product sold at that level, but he says it's indicative of what's going on. And I suppose we've also seen it more closer to home here with forward price contracts from the dairies, from the processors here, going over 40 cents a litre for the coming year. So like they're seeing what's happening out there in the market and they're reacting to that.
Quite an interesting take there, Deck. So I suppose not going back to the highs that we saw just over a year ago, but I don't think anyone was expecting them, but it does look good for the rest of 2024. So hopefully there will be some uplift in milk prices. So I suppose we're coming to the end of it now. So I suppose you can read lots more on these stories in this week's Irish Farmers Journal, which is on shelves now. We'd like to thank you, the listeners, and thanks again to Univet for sponsoring this podcast.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.